where we came from, where we've been. They're eternal questions that say a lot about where we're going as the human race. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. I'm Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. And we have a repeat guest. We're glad to speak with him again. I'm talking about George Lizos. And we're going to talk about a book that will be out just in the next several days, actually. It's called Secrets of Greek Mysticism. And George is a great person to talk about this subject with. He's the author of the book, and he's also a spiritual teacher, psychic healer, Greek pagan priest, creator of Intuition Mastery School, as well as a number one best-selling author with multiple books. He has been named one of the top 50 health and wellness influencers, and his work has been featured in Goop, Pop Sugar, and Mind Body Green. And we are so glad to have him today on the show to talk about Secrets of Greek Mysticism. George, welcome back. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, James. Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here again.
Now, I think most people from the Western tradition, when they think of the gods and goddesses of Greek mysticism, they think in terms of mythology. They think, okay, these were these archetypes and folks worship them and they're a thing of the past. But I don't think that's what you mean at all. Can you talk to us about what you mean by Greek mysticism and the gods and the goddesses?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking this question, because one of the main reasons I wanted to write this book is because every time I told people that I'm a practicing priest to Hellenic polytheism, the question was, oh, like Greek mythology, I love Greek mythology. And however much I loved hearing that, it also triggered me a little bit, because there is a huge difference between mythology and religion slash theology. So the ancient Greeks had their own religion, and that was the ancient Greek religion. They actually believed in the Greek gods and goddesses. And the way they were honored in their religious practices was very different from how we know them via myths. So in myths, we see gods that have human-like characteristics and human-like emotions. They fight with one another, they're jealous, they're very combative. But what's important to distinguish here is that mythology draws from theology, but not the other way around. The myths were created by deeply spiritual people, by the mystery schools, for the purpose of being analyzed in an allegorical, symbolic way and drawing out important messages about who the gods are, what the meaning of the gods are. Theology, on the other hand, has to do with the essence of the gods. And when it comes to talking about what are the Greek gods and goddesses, who are they really? They represent universal laws and functions. They don't hold within them the universal laws and functions. They are extensions of the universe. They're universes, universal manifestations and multiplications of the universe, expressing different universal laws. The myths can help us get to know them better, but we have to do so by interpreting the myths in a specific way.
So essentially, if I have this right, it's not a case where you're looking at this as kind of a historical curiosity, but it's you're looking at the gods and goddesses as living gods and goddesses that you can interact with.
Exactly. Essentially, the number one thing that my teacher taught me while I was like training to become a priest to the religion was that we don't really need to seek to find the gods. We are already swimming in the ocean of the gods. So the gods are not separate from us. We are part of this essence that is the gods. And all we have to do is turn within to recognize the gods within our own divinity. Now, what really confuses people is that why can't we just honor one single source of being? Why does it have to be separated into like thousands, even millions of gods? And that's because the gods are representations of universal functions. So when we talk about Aphrodite, for example, she embodies the law of form. She's the one who brings things into creation. When we talk about Ares, for example, who's known as the god of war, he's the most misunderstood kind of god. He's really the god of bravery and courage. So each god, each of the 12 Olympians, they have their own virtues that really is the way that we embody the god's essence. Hera, for example, she's all about fearless speech, pride or magnanimity. Poseidon, he's all about piety and goodness. Athena, she's about fortitude and quickness of mind. So when we identify those virtues that were brought forth by the philosophical schools at the time and were ascribed to specific gods, then we can start knowing the true essence of the gods.
So today, I think it's very popular and totally understandable to talk about the divine feminine. You know, after yes. being overlooked for thousands of years, people have said, hey, let's kind of look at the divine feminine and bring this tradition off the shelf and celebrate it and talk about it. And I think that's all great. But if I understand correctly, you think it's important to talk about the divine feminine and the divine masculine, correct?
Yes. I remember when I was first going to train in Greek polytheism, I was going with the expectation of like learning how to embrace the goddess and like practice being connected with the divine feminine, because as you said, it had been suppressed for such a long period of time. And having like come from different kind of spiritual modalities where it was all about the goddess and the divine feminine, that was my expectation. And then I go to the training and that's not what I got. Essentially, what they told me is like the ancient Greeks on the altars, they had to include both a male and a female deity. Now, of course, the gods and goddesses don't really have a gender. They are genderless. We have given them a form, a body, and a gender so that we can work with them in a more palpable way. And that gender reflects whether they are more of a masculine, feminine, masculine energy or a feminine energy god or goddess. So the reason I believe that for the divine feminine, for the divine feminine to rise, the divine masculine is to rise as well, is because the world at its essence is balanced in masculine and feminine energy. When you look at the basis of creation and how an atom is created, you see two different forces, the masculine force and the feminine force coming together. So that balance is at the basis of creation. And yes, it is very important to give more attention and more platform to the feminine right now because it has been repressed for so long. But let's not forget that we're all aiming for balance here. So the Greek tradition is all about starting with balance rather than just trying to shift it from the masculine to the feminine. And that's why when we honor the gods and goddesses in our spiritual practice on the altar, we're always including two gods, a male deity and a female deity. In essence, each god and goddess, they have their male or female counterpart. When we think of Zeus, for example, his female counterpart is Dione, who is the female version of Zeus. When we go with Aphrodite, she's also Aphroditus, mm-hmm. which is where Hermaphroditus comes from as well. So there's always the opposite gender that balances it out.
Now, in the book, I know you talk about how to live and work with the gods on a daily basis. But if you break that down into practical terms, what does that look like?
It firstly has to do with setting up an altar as a way of communicating with the god or goddess. Now, this is the most basic form of working with the gods in the sense that altars have been used since the beginning of time by so many different cultures, and they are portals of communication with the divine. They merge the space between the sacred and the profane, and they create this bridge from the profane world into the sacred. Now, an altar is simply a space, a physical space, a surface that you decide is your portal of communication with the divine. So you create a boundary within a profane space where you place your symbols, your statues, where you place your crystals, a candle, anything that helps you have that palpable connection with the divinity. And it's all a matter of like spending some time every single day at your altar, setting an intention to connecting with the god. Maybe you can use some of the practices that I share in the book. I have rituals about working with the gods during the new moon and the full moon, during the Greek wheel of the year, or simply by reciting the Orphic hymn to the god as a way of activating the god's energies within you, or just setting your own kind of intention or prayer in working with the gods. But even if people don't have the time to do that, the most important way of connecting with the gods, it's turning within. What I like to do is I like to take my dominant hand, place it on my heart, close my eyes and say, I am aware. And in that moment of saying, I am aware, you become aware of your own divinity. And that inner divinity, that is the gods working within you. So if you strip away all the bells and whistles of the rituals and the altars, all you need is your own understanding that you are part of this ocean of the gods.
Now, if somebody taps into this, is it a case where it's kind of like in some religions, it's kind of like, okay, our way is the one way, and you have to follow this exclusively. You shouldn't follow this religion or that religion. You need to just focus on this religion. Is this similar? This is really a way of life that you kind of need to dedicate yourself to? What are your thoughts?
It's not. It's actually non-dogmatic at all. Like when I came into this, I brought in my previous beliefs and it wasn't met with any like conflict or opposition from like the other priests of the religion. What's really important about pagan religions in general is that they're very accepting. They have to do with people's relationship with the earth, with nature, and with the universe. So there was always spiritual syncretism that was going on in the ancient times, meaning when new people would come in and bring their own beliefs and their own gods, the existing people of that land would welcome those gods in rather than try to change them and convert them to their own religion. So pagan religions in general are non-dogmatic. Specifically, the ancient Greek religion is non-dogmatic. So you can have your own beliefs and work with the gods in a specific way. There is an important distinction here that really answers the question. When it comes to the Greek religion, it has to do with guiding people to living virtuous lives from the moment they are born until the day they die. What happens before birth and after death is not the subject of religion, it's a subject of philosophy. And that's why the ancient Greeks, they had their own philosophical schools that had opposing beliefs about life after death, about reincarnation, etc. We have Platonism, we have the Aristotelian school, we have the Pythagoreans and the Orphics, we have the Stoics. The Stoics, for example, do not believe in life after death. The Pythagoreans and the Platonists, they believed. So they all belong to the same religion, but they all had different philosophical beliefs about the afterlife. So that is the approach that like Greek polytheism has.
Now, I won't ask you your favorite because that doesn't seem appropriate, but is there a particular god or goddess you find yourself gravitating towards or resonating more with?
So I believe we all have a guardian god or goddess, and basically this universal law or essence that we need to work with more in our lives to fulfill our specific life purpose. And in the book, Secrets of Greek Mysticism, I do have a meditation all about connecting and meeting your guardian god or goddess. So my guardian god is Apollo, but for a long period of time, I was called to work with Aphrodite. Now, why? Why do I have these different gods, guardian gods, or other gods that come and go? It's because we have different lessons that we need to learn. We have different contracts that we come into this life to fulfill. So Aphrodite came to me at a time when I had to embrace my sexuality, accept myself, and learn to love myself. Whereas Apollo accompanies me throughout my life because his energy, his essence is very aligned to my unique interests, personality, and purpose. So everybody has their own god or goddess, even if you don't work or have never worked with the Greek gods or goddesses. And let's say, for example, you've studied Celtic religion or the Norse religion or the Egyptian religion. All the gods and goddesses of the pagan religions, they hold similarities because the laws of the universe are set. It's just the way they've been packaged or described or personalized by people through time has changed. So let's say, for example, you're someone who works a lot with the Egyptian gods and you like the Egyptian god Ra. That's very similar to Apollo. So Apollo could be your garden god, including Ra as well, because they're very similar energies.
Now, you talked about meditations, and I know you also cover hymns and symbols in the book, and it's an audio show, so it's a little bit difficult to kind of describe the symbols, but can you talk about some of the symbols a little bit?
Yes, each god or goddess has their own symbols. And these are ways that they've been symbolized in iconography and in statues through the years. so that we can work with the gods in a more symbolic way. And again, the symbols, they are portals of information that we can learn more wisdom about the gods. For example, Hermes's symbol is the caduceus, one of the symbols. Now, everybody's familiar with the caduceus when you think about the symbol of medicine. The symbol of medicine is actually the rod of Asclepius, which is a rod with a snake wrapped around it. Now, this is the ancient Greek symbol of Asclepius, the god of medicine. Hermes's symbol, the caduceus, is very similar. It is a rod with two interlocking snakes around it and then wings at the top. So really, when you analyze that, okay, we have the rod that symbolizes our seven chakras, okay? And then you have the two snakes that symbolize health and they interlock on seven points on this rod, hence the seven chakras. And then at the top where we have the crown chakra, which is how like the, like other Eastern traditions have talked about the chakras. The Greeks haven't, but they recognized those portals of energy within the body. You have the wings, and that symbolizes enlightenment because that's what happens when the energy rises up through your chakra system and up to the crown chakra, you find enlightenment. And this is a golden rod, and gold is the color of enlightenment. So Hermes, naturally, he is the god that helps us find enlightenment and find spiritual ascension. So, this is just an example of how much information is held within symbols. With Apollo, we have the lyre as his main symbol because he's a god of harmony. With Aphrodite, we have the shell, the mirror, the knuckles, or a sphere. With Hera, we have the scepter or the crown or the peacock. Many people who are familiar with Xena, the warrior princess, that TV series, or Hercules, the legendary journeys, I used to love it. Hera was always symbolized as a peacock feather on the sky with two menacing eyes. Mm. So again, we can see how the symbolism of the gods has been included in modern pop culture as well.
Now, the hymns, and this fascinates me because are these new hymns? Are these hymns that have been handed down? And obviously, how you would get the melody and the actual... that kind of thing? Is it something that's been reconstructed? When we talk about the hymns, what are we talking about?
So there are many hymns that were written about the Greek gods. Some of them are ancient, some of them are modern. Now, the ones I included in the book are the Orphic hymns. Now, most people are familiar with the Homeric hymns, but the Orphic ones were actually religious myths, religious hymns, and therefore they were written by Orpheus, and they were practiced as part of Greek religion, specifically within the philosophical school of Orpheus, the Orphic philosophical school. So these are ancient Greek hymns, actually, that were translated to English. There is a free translation online, but I didn't want to use the free one. I actually paid to include a specific translation that I think is way more accurate. So people reading the book will actually get some really powerful hymns. And what's really important about that is that hymns, they are like keys to wisdom. Mm-hmm. Because they were written in the ancient times and they were recited over and over again by so many people, they hold so much power. So each time you recite the hymn, it awakens within you the vibrational frequency of that god. Now, thankfully, I can read Greek, modern Greek, and ancient Greek. So I read them in ancient Greek. So the power is way more potent. But it doesn't really make a difference whether you read them in English or in Greek or in ancient Greek. You still get access to that vibrational frequency. You don't need to sing them. They were not sung. They were recited in a way that you honor the gods. So you have both hands extended up to the sky. And this is another difference from the Abrahamic religions such as Christianity. Christianity is all about being humble and like looking down and going within and fearing God. Whereas with the Greek gods, the ancient Greek religion is all about honoring and thanking the gods. So you don't look down, you don't go within, you look upwards and you extend your arms up to the sky because you welcome the god's essence rather than fearing or praying or asking the gods for something.
If you were talking to someone today, and you are talking to people obviously through this show, and there's one thing you wanted them to know about Greek mysticism, if you could leave them with one thing, what would that one thing be?
The one thing is that you can connect with every single one of the gods. with a simple mantra. So what I've done in the book, I've created mantras that start with I am, or simply I. And I've done this very consciously because I want to create and reprogram people's mind into thinking that instead of looking out there to find the gods, you have to look within to find the gods. That's a huge mental shift from the Christian tradition, for example, that many people like were brought into, including me. And that's something that I had to go through as well. Instead of looking out there for the God and fearing the God and thinking that the gods are out there and they're trying to help me, realizing that I am part of the gods. So for example, Apollo's mantra is, I am light. Hermes' mantra is, I am guided at all times. Zeus's mantra is, I am safe and protected. But even if you don't have those mantras in the book, simply by saying, I am Apollo, I am Demeter, I am Artemis, I am Hestia, I am Ares, you invite that energy within you and you allow yourself to see yourself as part of that God, awakening that frequency within you.
Now, in the book, you talk about connecting with the gods and some different rituals. And what I'd like to do is take one of them and have you maybe describe it to us. For example, you talked about the full moon ritual. There's so much mystery around the full moon and so forth. So can you talk to us about the full moon ritual?
Yes, of course. So the ancient Greeks honored the moon in a big way. Like nowadays in the spiritual community, we have a new moon ritual and a full moon ritual. But if you think that in ancient Greece, they had a god dedicated to almost every single day of the moon cycle, that shows you how much attention they gave to the moon. First of all, they had lunar months. So the month started at the new moon, which was called Numenia, and then it ended at the dark moon before you go back to the new moon. So what I've done in the book, because we don't really have a lot of information about the new moon ritual or the full moon ritual, I've taken what we do have and I've adjusted that to work for the modern practitioner. So the new moon is all about setting our intentions in the Numenia festival, what people did essentially. No public celebrations were held because everybody was focused on updating the altars, on cleaning the house, decluttering, setting intentions for the month ahead. And then in the full moon, it was a celebration of those desires. It was this maximum energy of the moon coming into the earth and celebrating the abundance and the manifestation of everything you've intended. So I've created that ritual as a way of appreciating the gods of the moon, the goddesses of the moon, specifically Selene, Goddess Selene, Goddess Artemis, and Goddess Hecate. And then also releasing those desires to these goddesses, to the energy of the moon, and trusting that the desires will manifest at the perfect time-space sequence. So essentially, you set up the altar, and I provide extensive details about that in the book. You set up the altar, then you follow a certain procession where you recite the Orphic hymns to the three moon goddesses, and then you burn their desires and release that energy up to the moon.
And one other thing I want to cover with you, you have an appendix about receiving signs. What do you mean by that? Do the gods and goddesses send you signs?
Yes. So the divine is constantly communicating with us. The gods, they're trying to catch our attention every single minute of the day so that it can guide us on our path. All we have to do is find a way to listen. There are many ways of listening. Those people who practice like intuitive abilities, they've learned to access their intuition via their clairs, their four clairs, their intuition languages, clairvoyance, clairsentience, claircognizance, etc. But aside from that, and by the way, I do give information about receiving signs via that way, like by connecting with your intuition, but it's also about asking for a sign. The gods have their own symbols, and those symbols could be taken as their sign. For example, Hera and the peacock feather, or Hestia and fire, or Artemis with the bow, the bow. So by working with the specific symbols of the gods, but also choosing your own symbols and asking the gods to give you a symbol, if a sign, like via symbol, a sign mm-hmm. about something maybe you're working on, something you want to manifest, something you're not sure about, you can start receiving guidance from the gods in that way, in a very palpable way in your day-to-day life. And in the book, I talk about how signs come up, because sometimes it can get very ambiguous. The ego always likes to come in and doubt ourselves. So a sign is usually something that comes unexpected, and it's something spontaneous, and it's something that is a little bit out of the ordinary. So you don't go out there looking for a sign. You choose a sign in advance. You set an expectation with the gods. Say, gods, please give me a sign if I'm meant to do this within the next 24 hours. It's very important to set a boundary and give them like a timeline. And then you choose the specific signs. Show me a holographic car, for example, because it's something, for example, that's out of the ordinary. And therefore, you wouldn't see it everywhere. You wouldn't say, show me a white car, and then you go out there searching for a white car. You choose something that's a little bit out of the ordinary, but it's within the range of possibility that you're going to see it. And then you give them a time frame, and you go out there and see what comes up. So I have a whole system in the book about how to choose signs, how to program the sign, and what to do when you're not receiving the signs. And that's how we can start communicating with the gods in a more palpable way.
Well, it's been a fascinating discussion, and I think if folks are interested in different spiritual traditions and want to broaden their horizons, certainly Secrets of Greek Mysticism, A Modern Guide to Daily Practice with the Greek Gods and Goddesses would be a natural choice. George, I realize that the book will be out very shortly, but as I understand it, it is currently available for pre-order on Amazon. So please share with anybody and everybody where you would like them to check out all of your work in this book.
Yes. If you go to GreekMysticism.com, when you order the book and you enter your order number there as well, you also get free access to a workshop with me all about meeting your guardian Greek god or goddess. So make sure to go to GreekMysticism.com. And of course, the book is available anywhere books are sold, including Amazon.
Well, it's been a great discussion. Our guest has been George Lizos, Secrets of Greek Mysticism. Check it out. George, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Jim.
And thank you for tuning in. And we'll talk to you next time and keep exploring those mysteries. Bye-bye, everybody.